listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. Support this podcast, go to www.nakedbibleblog.com.
Welcome back to the Naked Bible Podcast. Today I'm going to continue with our series on Bible study at the word level. Last time we talked about exegetical fallacies that arise from flawed word study methods. In this episode, though, I want to transition to some important elements that go into word study, something positive, something that you want to do. Today we'll primarily be focused on examining a word as it's used by a single author throughout the material that that author wrote, in this case, the Apostle Paul. But the word I've chosen for our focus also means that we'll be getting into the issue of a word's distribution across a corpus, in this case, obviously, the New Testament. Now, since this example that I've picked is so restrictive, again, since my primary interest in this episode is a single author's use as opposed to a wider distribution, I'll probably return to word distribution when doing word studies in a future episode. But let's just jump into what we want to cover today. I want to get started by turning to 1 Corinthians 7. Now, during the course of the podcast that follows, as we go on here, I'll be talking about specific words in 1 Corinthians 7. I've reproduced the important sections of the chapter on the podcast website. It's episode 32. And I have certain words colored and marked for reasons that I'll indicate as we proceed here. You can reference that material as you listen or go back and look at it afterwards. I'll also mention certain Greek lexicons. Those are specialized dictionaries that cover a specific corpus in a language, in this case the New Testament, and again some of the eras that are related to the New Testament. There are links to those tools that I'll mention under episode 32 at the Bibliography and Resources tab on the podcast website. So without further ado, let's jump into 1 Corinthians 7. Now, you've probably read this chapter before. It's a controversial chapter. Paul is dealing with marriage and divorce and remarriage and betrothal and all these different things about sexual and marital relationships. In the first seven or eight verses, he basically sort of gets warmed up and recommends, again, marriage to avoid, you know, sexual immorality and so on and so forth. In verse 8 is where I want to jump in. Paul says, "To the unmarried and the widows, I say that it is good for them to remain single as I am." I'm reading in the ESV, by the way. "But if they cannot exercise self-control, then they should marry." Now notice, he just said they should marry, and he's recommending that two groups marry if they can't remain single, again, because of sexual temptation. And the two groups were the unmarried and the widows. Okay, we'll come back to that in a moment. He says, "It's just better to marry than to burn with passion." Verse 10, "To the married I give this charge, not I, but the Lord. The wife should not separate from her husband. But if she does, she should remain unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband. And the husband should not divorce his wife. To the rest I say, again I, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife who is an unbeliever, and she consents to live with him, he should not divorce her. If any woman has a husband who is an unbeliever, and he consents to live with her, she should not divorce him. For the unbelieving husband is made holy or sanctified because of his wife, and the unbelieving wife is made holy or sanctified because of her husband. Otherwise, your children would be unclean. As it is, they are sanctified." They're holy. And that's a whole separate issue, what Paul talks about there. He's not talking about salvation. But let's move on, finally, with verse 15. "If the unbelieving partner separates, let it be so. In such cases, the brother or sister, the believer, is not enslaved. God has called you to peace." Now, what I want to focus on here is the word unmarried. It occurred two times in that section I just read, and if you're looking at the website, the section there, I have them colored in red. "To the unmarried and the widows I say," and then Paul talks about the woman who has separated or divorced from her husband, that she should remain unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband. Now, it's interesting, how do we define unmarried? What does that mean? Well, it occurs two times here, and it's actually going to occur only four times in the entire New Testament. And guess what? We've seen two of them here. The other two occurrences are also in this chapter. If we go down to verses 32 and through 34, we get the other two occurrences. Let me just pick them up for you. Paul says, I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man, there's the word again, unmarried, is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to please the Lord. But the married man is anxious about worldly things, how to please his wife, and his interests are divided. And the unmarried or betrothed woman is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to be body, holy in body and spirit, so on and so forth. So there's your other two occurrences of unmarried. Now, what this means is that this word, unmarried, occurs four times in the entire New Testament, all of them in this chapter, and therefore all of them are used by the Apostle Paul. It's not found anywhere else. So I'm going to suggest to you that we should allow Paul, since he's the one who uses it, and it's used only here, we should allow Paul to tell us how to understand the range of meanings that he would have in his mind for the word unmarried, for what constitutes an unmarried person. Now, you know, if we look this up in a Greek lexicon, and the lemma here, the Greek lemma is agameo. If we looked it up in something like Bauer, Donker, Arndt, and Gingrich's Greek-English lexicon of the New Testament and other early Christian lit, BDAG, as it's called by users and those of us in the field, if we looked it up in BDAG or maybe Liddell Scott's Greek-English lexicon, which covers more historical eras than just the New Testament and early Christian literature, we would discover that agameo, unmarried, is used by Greek writers in all different periods for all of the expected states of being spouseless. I mean, at the heart of it, that's what unmarried means. I am in a state of not having a spouse. Okay, whatever constitutes that state or whatever led to that state is the issue. But if you are in the state of being where you do not have a spouse, you are by definition unmarried. Now, unmarried can mean several things. It can mean that you've never been married at all, ever before in your life, with or without having a virginal status or not. The virgin, in fact, is covered by a different term that's actually used in this chapter as well, parthenos. But if you're a virgin, you've never been sexually active, and you've never been married, you would be agameo, you would be unmarried. Okay, but you could be unmarried if you had been married before and are now in the state of being spouseless. And that would cover people like those who have been divorced or those who are widowed or widowers. And it would also cover a situation where you were married, but your spouse has deserted you or abandoned you, just left you. And that is implied in this chapter, in the sections we just read, although the vocabulary that Paul uses for separating is used elsewhere within and without the New Testament for divorce. Okay, so I'm just, you know, casting a wide net here because the Greco-Roman culture, this is the culture, the cultural time of the New Testament, the culture in which Paul was writing, the culture in which the people who live that are receiving Paul's letter are living. We can't assume that the ancient culture, and in fact it didn't, had the same sort of legal categories that our culture does. I mean, we have a category called separated that isn't actually divorced. Well, again, we make that distinction, but with what Paul's dealing with, a separation, a forsaking, an abandoning, for whatever reason, including, you know, an unequal marriage in terms of spiritual status, you're Christian and non-Christian, where he's saying, he's in the passage we just read, he's saying, look, this could happen. Your spouse could just leave you because you're a believer. If that happens, well, you have, you know, you let them go, but you're not a slave. You're not enslaved to that person. So it's a little bit different. It's one of those things where it's kind of the same and kind of different as well, two sides of that coin. We can't assume the same categorizations. What Paul is dealing with when he talks about separation of partners is really a practical divorce. I mean, it is something that results in a permanent condition, whether it would have the legal standing or not, and whether we would be able to match it with some of the legalese that we use today. It's a practical divorce situation. So what does all that mean? Why does it all matter? How is it that this is the centerpiece of what we want to talk about on the podcast today? Well, it's important to understand, to correctly interpret what an author is saying, to know how he's using a term, what is included and what can be excluded. And in some cases, it's not easy to determine what could be included or excluded. But here, Paul is the only person who uses this term, and he actually describes certain conditions that help us to determine what unmarried could mean. So let's go back to verse 8. Paul says, to the unmarried and the widows, I say. Now right there, this tells you that when Paul uses the word unmarried, most likely the people who would be spouseless there are not including widows or widowers, because he follows up unmarried with the very term widows. So we have widows. We know what they are. Their spouse has died, or a widower, obviously. So that means that unmarried could include any of those other circumstances as well. Again, never been married or divorced, or again, a practical divorce through desertion or separation. So Paul's speaking to different groups here. The unmarried and the widows, I say, it's good for them to remain single, as I am, but if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry. For it is better to marry than to burn with passion. He follows that in verse 10. To the unmarried I give this charge, the wife should not separate from her husband. Don't leave your husband. Don't divorce your husband. Now, the word there is chorizo, which means to divide, to create a division or separation, hence the translation separation. In the colored material, I've colored this green with an underline under it. Chorizo is green with the underline. You'll notice there's other green terms. Paul continues in verse 11, this person that shouldn't separate from her husband, I'm recommending don't separate, but if she does, you know, if there is a separation, again, a practical divorce here, a desertion, she should remain unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband. And the husband should not divorce, there's the other green term, his wife. Now, this is a different term. It's aphiemi. This is to release or to let go or to just, you know, get rid of, that kind of thing. It's standard divorce language. Now, both of these terms, I've colored them in green because if you'll notice in 1 Corinthians 7, 8 through 15, they are used interchangeably. In other words, they're not strict legal categories or distinctions in and of themselves. They are used interchangeably for and including the situation where a unbelieving spouse deserts, abandons, again, in practical terms, divorces the believing member of the marriage. So they're used interchangeably. Paul's clearly including divorce. Now, here's the issue. There's a lot of, you know, controversy about divorce and remarriage. Can a divorced person get remarried and all that sort of thing? Usually on the basis of discussion in the Gospels in Matthew 19. I'll get back to Matthew 19 in a moment, but here we are in 1 Corinthians 7, and Paul clearly includes, both by context and also the semantic range of the word meaning, and he's the only one who uses it. So we can't go outside and get other information, at least in the New Testament. Paul clearly includes people who could be divorced in his discussion of the state of being spouseless, of being unmarried. Now, in verse 11, he recommends that the unmarried person be reconciled to their spouse. Okay, that you know, that's obviously his optimal choice. If she does separate, she should remain unmarried or else be reconciled with her husband. Again, that's what Paul recommends. But in verse 8, he had said to the unmarried and the widows, there he says, if you can't contain, again, if you can't overcome sexual temptation, then you should marry. Again, Paul, I would say it this way, there's no way to approach this passage, this section of Scripture, and legitimately say that Paul could not have had divorced people in mind when he recommends that the unmarried should marry if they can't avoid sexual temptation. Again, I don't know how you would be able to deliberately and cleanly separate, really distinguish or eliminate that meaning, that possible meaning for unmarried from this passage. And it's important because, again, we have situations, just like Paul did, where you have divorced people in the church wondering, can I get remarried or not? What does the Bible say? Well, I would say that there's really no legitimate way to exclude divorced people from Paul's discussion here. If we go down, in fact, to the other two occurrences of unmarried, they're very generic, again, talking about just the state of being spouseless, and if you're single, you'll be thinking more about the things of the Lord, and if you're married, you get distracted because you have a wife or a spouse to please, and all that sort of thing. We can see here, in verse 34, Paul addresses the unmarried and the betrothed woman, okay? So, again, it creates the distinct possibility, I would say the likelihood, that here unmarried is being set off from betrothed, from the virgin. So earlier in the chapter, Paul's use of the term unmarried told us that it could be distinct from someone who was widowed or a widower. And here it could be distinct from someone who's a virgin. The word betrothed here in verse 34 is parthenos. It's the word for virgin. So, again, we have clear indications that when Paul uses the word unmarried, it's very likely that he is including in that word the idea that you are spouseless because you've been divorced formally or you've been divorced practically. Your spouse has abandoned you, has deserted you. Again, how would we look at the four occurrences of unmarried in this chapter and be able to exclude divorced people from what Paul says? Because Paul clearly says in verse 8, if you can't contain, you should get married. In fact, if you go to verse 27 and verse 28, listen to what Paul says here. He says, are you bound to a wife? Are you married? Well, don't seek to be free. Again, don't try to get out of the marriage. Are you free from a wife? Okay, you're not married. Do not seek a wife. Again, the context here, he's going to say in verse 28, is worldly troubles, and he's just alluded to, in fact, in verse 26, the present distress. Again, there's some sort of situation, most scholars think it's persecution, where Paul is recommending, hey, just, you know, stay as you are, don't get married, don't have kids because of the suffering and all that sort of thing. And that gets into what the Roman persecutors would do to Christian wives and Christian children, especially daughters and that sort of thing. That it was a serious thing. They could do horrific things to them. And so Paul is just sort of recommending everybody stay where they're at. But he says, look, if you're bound to a wife, don't try to get out of the marriage. If you're free from a wife, hey, my advice is don't seek to get married. And verse 28, but if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a betrothed woman marries, she has not sinned. Again, there's that word betrothed. Okay, it's parthenos, it's a virgin. So he's talking to two broad categories of people who are unmarried. One of them is virgins. So that means the others who are in the state of being spouseless, if they do marry, they have not sinned. Again, you see what we're saying here, what we're angling for here is, if we're going to be talking about the legitimacy of remarriage in the church, this question. We must go to 1 Corinthians 7. We must include it in our discussion. And we must let Paul define what an unmarried individual is. And there's no way, based upon the word's meaning and the context in which it occurs, and these are the only four occurrences that there are in the New Testament, there's no way to exclude divorced people from the permission to remarry. And this is what I'm angling for, what I'm talking about here. Now, the logical question is, what about Matthew 19? You know, where the whole statement of Jesus, you know, except it be for fornication, you know, you can get married or not remarried. If you remarry, you end up committing adultery and all that sort of thing. Well, the truth is that it's beyond the scope of this podcast, but that saying is actually controversial. Grammatically, it could work either way. It could either disallow remarriage or it could allow remarriage, depending on the situation of how the initial divorce occurred, whether there was adultery involved in that or not. So it's not very clear. It's not actually clear, again, in scholarly discussion anyway, that that statement disallows remarriage. I would also add this. The reason Paul never references the teaching here of Jesus, I think, is twofold. Because Paul's talking about divorce and remarriage in this whole chapter of 1 Corinthians 7. Why doesn't he quote Jesus? Well, he probably doesn't quote him because the Gospel of Matthew, and I would say Mark for that matter, had not yet been written. 1 Corinthians has some clear chronological markers that you could, again, look up in a New Testament introduction talking about 1 Corinthians. Scholars are very able to date 1 Corinthians to the mid-50s A.D. About 55 is the date that people usually target. So let's just go with it. Mid-50s. Matthew is almost universally considered by scholars to have been written sometime before 70 and likely just before 70. Again, for a number of indications we can't go into here. So Paul would never have seen it because Matthew wasn't written yet. Mark is usually considered a little earlier, and the earliest you can put Mark is the mid-50s, the same as 1 Corinthians. And so it's very likely that Paul never saw it. Mark is writing somewhere else. Paul is out ministering to the Gentiles, and that's why he doesn't quote it. The other issue is that Jesus is addressing the question from within Jewish culture, with a touch point, of course, to the Old Testament. Paul isn't doing that here. Paul is writing to Corinthians. He's addressing the situation on the ground in Greco-Roman culture, the situations that were present in real Greco-Roman life, and his own present distress, the present persecution situation within this, you know, predominantly Gentile church here in the city of Corinth. Entirely different contexts for what Paul's dealing with and what Jesus was commenting when he's confronted by the scribes and the Pharisees there. So I would argue that there's not going to be an inconsistency when it's all settled and done. But again, that's really beyond the scope of this particular podcast episode. But just sticking with what Paul's saying here, it's really nigh unto impossible because the word usage is so restricted, again, to Paul, both in terms of distribution and its use by New Testament authors. He's the only one, it's only four times, and it's all right here. It's nigh unto impossible to exclude divorced people from what Paul says here about the unmarried in 1 Corinthians 7. So I like to use this illustration as, again, a good illustration, I think, of the importance of, when you're doing word studies, taking note of not only where the word is used and how many times and all that sort of thing, but how does a particular author use the term? Is there consistency within it of the way an author uses a particular term? Does an author always use the term the same way? Again, you have to be looking at the way a particular writer uses a particular term, the particular word that you're studying. And then, of course, in this case, we get into distribution because there really isn't any. I mean, it's only four times in this particular book. But that's another thing to consider, the isolation or the distribution of how a word is used, again, to narrow the possibilities, to create situations where you can plausibly discern what the word means in the context. And the context is cultural, and here the context is also literary, the distribution, the actual use of the word. What the word means in context, again, so that you can draw conclusions from the passage based upon your understanding and study of the words.
Thanks for listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. To support this podcast, visit www.nakedbibleblog.com. To learn more about Dr. Heiser's other websites and blogs, go to www.drmsh.com.